Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. Your hosts are Dr. On, board-certified clinical sexologist, and Xander Kagg, licensed clinical social worker. Xander will do the honors and introduce our guest.
Yes, thank you, On. So our guest today is Faye Gibson. Faye is a trans activist, artist, and performer featured in the film Gender Redesigner. I'm looking forward to hearing about that. And they're also active in LGBTQ advocacy and healthcare issues nationwide. Welcome to the Umbrella Hour, Faye.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Okay. So except for just before we hit record, it's been a long time since we've seen each other. I'm trying to remember when it might have been, and I'm thinking maybe somewhere in the mid-2000s in San Francisco. Is that, you think that's about right?
You got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm not exactly sure exactly how we met. I do remember us doing a talk at some sort of organization, and I'm not sure if we were talking to other queer folks or what, but I do remember another speaker there who was an intersex person. And that was the first time I had met anybody that was out as intersex, and I was fascinated. I couldn't get enough. I've always had an insatiable hunger for anything queer. So I was just eating it all up. So I do remember, I think you set that talk up, and I'm not sure if, yeah, right? It was like a bajillion
years. I know, I'm like, oh my God, that's too long ago.
But we met, we talked, we bonded, and then you said that you and Megan Rohrer were doing a collection of essays and asked if I would participate in that. So
yes.
I sent you a little essay, and you guys put together a stunning book of essays from other trans guys and trans mask people, and it was just a lovely thing. And so I had been in contact with you through the years regarding that and seeing other projects you had been working on. And so we had a parasocial relationship after I moved away from California.
Was that Manning Up?
No, that was Letters for My Brothers, which was published in 2010. So we started collecting letters, or as they said, essays from individuals probably about 2 years before that. So probably 2008. The idea for Letters for My Brothers came from my learning about Lou Sullivan. He was a prolific letter writer with other trans men all around the world for a number of years. And I thought, oh, that's a cool idea, you know, letter writing. We included in Letters for My Brothers a couple of letters that went back and forth between Lou and a gentleman named David. So that's in there. And then a bunch of other letters. And several people from that book have actually been guests on the show. So now, now you're on the show. That's amazing.
Yeah, he was a founder of F2M International, FTMI. I actually have one of those magazines. I didn't bring it with me. I'm at work. I don't have good internet at my house.
Well, you know, he founded FTM San Francisco, I think in the maybe 1986.
Yeah.
And they had monthly meetings or bi-monthly meetings. And then after he passed away, he died of complications related to AIDS. And Jameson Green and some other people took over the organization. They renamed it FTM International because it was just FTM San Francisco. But then all of a sudden they realized, oh, Lou was corresponding with trans men, or what he called back in the day, FTMs, female to male transsexuals, older school language, all over the world. And I think James, he traveled and he went and met a bunch of those guys. And so they were like, let's go international, because they had started their own groups all over the world because Lou had helped them connect with each other. It's a really beautiful, true pioneer of our community that so many people don't know about still.
And I know several people are working on anthologies and archival projects of how we came into the 20th and 21st century through letters, then through media, film and media, television shows, social media. And here we are today, 2025.
That's right.
Even though people on the right are, where did transgender people just came out of nowhere?
Well, I think most of the time when people are looking up trans people or they've heard about trans people, it's fairly rare that they stumble on the history of a trans man or FTM or trans masculine person. We're not as visible, and our ways of connecting were very different from the trans women, whether they were cross dressers or transsexuals, or there were a lot of different categories of people back in the day. And so, right, we were congregating in different places or connecting with each other in different ways. So it makes sense. So
I mean, that's a whole conversation in and of itself. Trans male communities, trans women communities. where they intersect, how they differ. And that is definitely because of misogyny and sexism and all the other isms. And then how we're going into man world and they're going into woman world and how that scene.
Mm-hmm. I tend to believe, just from my own personal experience and from other guys that I've known over the years, I've been on T 20 years, so it's been, you know, 20 years walking this path, that when we transition, we don't leave behind sexism. I think it travels with us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an invisible component of the FTM or trans man or trans masculine experience. I've literally had trans women tell me that I don't get to claim sexism anymore. It's been years since that happened because I don't tend to engage in conversations on that topic very often. Mm-hmm. But I was sort of like, really? So the first 40 years of my life where I was experiencing that, all of a sudden that's just disappears. That's crazy.
Right. No, your experience of it just differs and your understanding of it differs and how it plays out differs, but it's still there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So you have all types of people. Obviously, I'm trying to distill it down a little bit, but like you have trans men who are feminists and understand the roles that sexism and misogyny play in the world and try to see it for what it is. And then there are trans men who really want to absorb into male culture, whatever that may be, and move away from it or ignore it, or I don't know, but it's very interesting. I'd say a dichotomy. Yeah, I'd say there's a little from the queer people, the queer feminist guys, and then the guys that identify perhaps as straight. And now that's not ubiquitous. That's not true across the board, but that's what I see, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Spring. Yeah, and I was going to add to that, that I have come across some of them participating in the misogyny as a way of fitting in, I would presume.
And unfortunately, I've seen it in all of our groups, the LGBT, the G, the B, the T. However, I like that our community, our queer community, isn't afraid to go, ooh, what you just said there's a little bit problematic. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that and sometimes have a nice little discussion and engage and perhaps shift how you think about it. It chafes a little bit when somebody calls me out, but I like to correct myself. I want to be a better person. So if that thing that I said offended you, I want to know why. And I want to try to do better if I can. Yeah. So
I was reading a story the other day about Michael Dillon, who was a trans man who transitioned in the 40s in the UK and also Ireland. He went to medical school, became a medical doctor, and he had access to testosterone in the 40s when it was first available. Right. In pill form. So he was able to start masculinizing, so to speak, from that process. He was also the first trans guy to have alloplasty, and he had top surgery, a hysterectomy. And
was there a book about him called The First Man-Made Man?
There's a couple.
Yeah. Okay.
Pagan Kennedy wrote that book about him, The First Man-Made Man, The First Man-Made Man. And then he wrote his own book that was published many, many years after he died. He died suddenly sometime in, I think, the early 60s. And that book didn't come out until maybe sometime after 2015, maybe 2016, 17. Oh, I forget what it's called. We'll have to look that up. Out of the Ordinary. That's what it's called. And it's in his words. I was reading about him, and he also wrote a book called Self, which is the first book to talk about the act of taking hormones for the purpose of changing your sex, being able to change your sex on legal documents and things. It was published in 1946, I believe, which is 20 years before Harry Benjamin published his book, The Transsexual Phenomenon. He was learning about hormones and he wrote this book about on endocrinology, which I don't think was even a distinct field in medicine at that point. But why I brought him up is because I was reading that he took on a chauvinistic attitude.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to have women find him attractive. He was having a difficult time knowing how to be in relationship with women. He actually fell in love with and tried to date a trans woman. Her name was Roberta Cowell. She was a race car driver. He did her orchiectomy as a surgeon and then professed his love to her. And she basically rebuffed him and he was heartbroken. And so he didn't want women to come on to him. He was a very good-looking, successful guy.
What was his name again?
Dr. Michael Dillon, D-I-L-L-O-N. There's a Wikipedia page about him as well. I wonder, because you mentioned something about generalizing, of course, which is not going to be true for everybody, but there's distinctions between the different kinds of trans guys and the ones that might be more part of that sexist or chauvinistic or
toxic masculinity.
I wonder, because you mentioned something about for that same reason, to keep people away from them.
Great question. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know I acted a little bit differently at the beginning of my transition and now. And I think that's just because I've been finding my comfort zone, how I like to express my gender and sexuality. And I mean, honey, it is a tale that is not over yet. So I'm just going with it.
Well, it's also a lot of time has passed, right? It's just right. Development, maturation.
Mm-hmm.
It makes
and,
sense.
You know, a personality type. Some people stay at a job for 30, 40 years. I would go insane. So that's to mix it up a little bit.
Hey, when did you transition?
I started in 2002. I started taking a little bit of low dose testosterone bioidentical cream, the chrysanthemum cream. And then I did start taking shots, I think, in 2004. And that's when I had top surgery. Yeah. So, but I had been thinking about it since I was two.
That's amazing. That's yeah. That's what we hear, right? That's what people say. Yeah.
I know that there are late in life people that come to realization, and I'm not exactly sure if that's because social pressure just got to them so much that they didn't really think about it. I tend to think that that's been something that's been going on in the back of their minds at least forever. Since I had a consciousness about genders and where I fit in, I felt something was different going on.
It's interesting because I grew up in Europe and it's, you know, it's a little more open than here at the time. So I was, you know, 1950s, 55 is when I was actually born. And I probably went back and forth just because I like fashion. That's just my thing. So it didn't matter if it was male or female. If I was drawn to it, I liked it. But the irony of it is, as I got older, I had gone to work one day and I came back and I was jarred. Let's put it that way. And I said to my mother, people repeatedly call me handsome. And she says, well, you are. My mother was an artist and I had long hair. I mean, I wasn't particularly expressing male per se, just being myself. And it jarred me. I didn't go back to that thought process until much later. I don't really think I suppressed anything. I was just being me in the way I've always been. I did it again recently. I painted my jeans designer colors. And my mother said she would not be caught dead, as artistic as she was, on the flight with me if I wore those jeans. I wore them anyway, my poor mother. Yeah, I would do quirky things like that. So yeah, it's interesting because Xander and I do hear that quite a bit. And I've met some of those youngsters who are now adults. Yeah.
I never had any sense of anything was wrong. I was just a little tomboy. And then I came out the dyke when I was a teenager and I was happy just living in that existence. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I didn't get any pushback at all from being the little tomboy. There was no issue in my family, even though I was raised in a Mexican Catholic family. I didn't have that. I was very fortunate. And I also had brain damage when I was six. And so I really don't know what I was thinking before the age of about eight, because it took me a couple of years through physical and behavioral and speech and occupational therapy to hit a new normal and then go on from there. So I have no idea, but my parents never mentioned it. I look at pictures and it doesn't look like I was being forced. I was really girly as a little kid. But then after the encephalitis, I was a very rough and tumble kid, so much so that my mother sent me away because she said I was being too aggressive towards my sister. So she sent me to go live with my dad in California. And I was in Arizona at the time. And so they told me I had a personality shift or change with the encephalitis. And so maybe that's part of it. My mom said when I was about 14, she had my hormones tested and I was high in testosterone. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said to her and me, well, she might turn out to be a lesbian. And I was like, I already have a girlfriend, idiot. You know, like I was so like, you know, my mom knew that. And so, but I was 39 when I started tea, right? 20 years ago. And so I think that there might be just some differences in when we were born and what kind of family or society we're born into and what's acceptable, what's not. Because whenever I hear people's stories where they're from a really young age, they feel they're pushing against things and getting a lot of pushback right? Nobody forced me to dress in any particular way. And so, or behave in a particular way. By the time I was in elementary school, it was different from An's generation. If An had been grown up here where they had uniforms, where he would have been stuck in a dress or a skirt, right? I was already, even though I was in Catholic school, I was wearing shorts, right? So it's, right, with Southern California. So there's a sense in which those things probably do play piece in it. And then there's the, I'm just going to use strange language, but I think you'll understand what I mean. The listener will understand ultimately. The trans guys who were straight versus the ones who were gay or lesbian, and then transition. And so you have the trans men who are attracted, have always been attracted to men almost exclusively, right, on the Kinsey scale. And so their whole coming to understanding of themselves is very different from somebody like me who was part of lesbian community for many, many, many years, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that those are some interesting differences too that show up in our community.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The gender and the sexuality is forever going to be confusing, which I love. People in our community, I say queer because that's a word I love. Our queer community love messing with people gender-wise, sexuality-wise. It's great. I love it. It's hard for straight people to understand. Sometimes it's hard for old school gay people to understand. And that's okay. You know, if somebody tells me something, I'm going to take them for face value. But something as innocent as their gender and sexuality, I'm going to be like, yes, I believe you. And whatever you want me to call you, I will call you, babe. You know, and I've gotten to that place. You know what I mean? Some people are just very thrown by things and they're thrown by someone presenting in a gender that they might not look like or whatever to them. Who made you the gender police?
Interestingly enough, I think because there's so many people in the United States, right? If we're talking about the United States with 350 million, I would imagine that at least half of those people have still never met a trans person. I mean, we're a small group of people and
we're less than 1%.
There's differences. There's more now because trans means a very broad thing now, but
umbrella, isn't this the umbrella hour?
I guess. Yeah, that's true. But it's like, I would imagine part of what's different about the members of our community is where they're living. Right. Mm-hmm. And so where they might be one of a couple or one alone or one of many, many, many. Right. Depending on the place in the country. And so I would imagine most people still have no idea. And then they're going to encounter somebody. Could be anybody. It doesn't even have to be a trans person. I mean, I can't remember, but I'm sure when Boy George was on MTV, that there were people going, what the heck is that? Mm-hmm. Right. Because I think that's still true to this day. I said it recently to somebody and they were like, oh, you're probably right. I was like, the average person doesn't know the difference between a transsexual woman, a crossdresser, a gay feminine guy who's maybe doing drag or female impersonation. They probably think they're all the same person. They have no idea how different they really are.
Yes.
I think that's most people. I still think that's the reality of just society.
Yeah. And, you know, the more that I'm seeing people be as their authentic selves and living in their families and their community spaces as themselves fearlessly, I might add, I'm very impressed with some of these people and being like, here I am. And if you have questions, I'll answer them. But being part of their regular old community and allowing those people to see them and trying to figure things out. And then that brings me to being in your chosen family and in your created community and how much strength and power and love and how awesome it is. And that's why I started doing queer health acupuncture nights in Pittsburgh. We were trying to do it here in Butler. I'm in Western Pennsylvania. And we had a nice little PFLAG group here. We started it in like 2008, 2009. But things in Butler really fizzle out. And I know there are queer people here. There are trans people here, there are queer people here, but they're under the nooks and crannies. There's an intersection of religion and queerness that's very interesting and odd. I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, but because of what I've seen Christianity and Islam and other and Judaism do to people who are queer and gay and etc. However, not that everybody in religions is bad, okay? I have friends that are.
It's like for those but, more orthodox elements of those. Even Buddhism, there is more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. I did mean to leave out all of the other major religions who have given a over the millennia. But anyways, but so I tried to start stuff here in Butler, and I do have a queer health acupuncture night here in Butler on Thursdays, but I've had my friends come to it, etc. But it's hard to get traction here.
We are going to take our first commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Faye Gibson, who is a trans activist, artist, and performer featured in Gender Redesigner. He remains active in LGBTQ+ advocacy and healthcare. Let's take our first commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Faye Gibson. Let's pick up where we left off.
But in Pittsburgh, there's tons of queer people. There's 5 major universities there, people from all over the world. So tons of queer bios. And interestingly enough, I started this last December. So it's been over a year in Pittsburgh. And I do it 2 times a month. And tons of trans guys. And I was just like, oh my God, this is great. I get to be in connection with the microcosm of the bigger community, which I'm a part of, you know, and it's lovely to see that. And that brings me to Gender Redesigner, because a couple of them, I always said, oh, well, you know, it's a documentary, da da da. And they're like, oh, what is it? And one of them had just had top surgery. And they were like, I watched your documentary, I loved it. And I was like, and some of the topics are still pretty relevant to this day, aren't they? And they were like, yeah, what the hell? Have we even done anything in the last 20 years? And I know we have, but you know what I mean?
Yes, but no, it can feel like things have stood still. I'd love for you, don't give it away, of course. We want people to go and watch it.
Well,
and
then you can tell them where they,
where they can watch it. But what's the basic premise of the film?
It is a 5 years of my transition. So basically, we started out doing a documentary that had a different feel. We wanted to go around to as many areas in the country as possible and say, what do you do to support your queer life? How do you have community? How do you let your freak flag fly? And you live in the middle of Bumble, Indiana, or Massachusetts even, or even in New York City. What if you don't like going out to bars and stuff? So we just wanted to explore queerness and how people across the country experienced it and liked to have community and have fun. Well, during this time, I was considering transitioning and talking more seriously about it. And finally was like, I'm just going to do it. I had been researching it for a couple of years. So I took a queer theory class in college and my mind went wild. And I was like, oh, these are the words for the things I was feeling. Oh my God. And it's not like I didn't know I was a little queerbo. I very much did. I came out at like 15, but I was like, where does my gender fit into this? So I got some ideas about that. Leslie Feinberg, RIP, I met them. Oh God, what a wonderful person. Pat Califia, all these different people. I won't list. The list is exhaustive, but it was so great to dive into that world and be like, oh yeah, this is where I want to be. So as I discovered how I wanted to proceed in this body, I started to transition. And Johnny Bergman, the filmmaker, we should video you. We should tape you doing this. And I was like, oh God, that's going to be, oh God, that's going to be so much. And it was. But I'm happy we did it because it was good to document that. I mean, that is archival. You know what I mean? Like I did it. We showed the paperwork. We showed the surgeries that I was doing. We showed how my family was dealing with it, how my friends were dealing with it. I mean, it was 5 years of that beginning process. And I think it was really special and powerful. And then I moved to San Francisco, which is where the movie ends. And my life as a trans man happened. I think it's a very warm your heart thing. There's not a lot of drama, you know what I mean? There's not a lot of cliffhangers. It's very pretty straightforward. And but I did go from, like, I was a gender performer in New York City. I started out with Murray Hill. Shout out, Murray's doing great right now. And he supported me. He was like, yeah, you can do this. This is great. And invited me to all these different shows and stuff. And so I was doing drag king. It really transformed as my perception of my own gender transformed and my act evolved. And it was pretty fun. So there's a little bit of that in the movie, but it is on Prime, but I don't like to support Bezos. So I do have it on my Google Drive. So if anybody wants it, they can email me and I'll send it to them. I also have DVDs if you want to get old school.
Nice.
I just sent one to a friend in Canada.
I wanted to mention that it is ever evolving, this identity of ours. And it's taken me a long time to get to know myself even throughout this process. And I think that is a huge piece of what people don't understand. The majority of people in the world don't really understand. It's almost as if they expect a person to already have existed in this way. And so then when the transition is initiated, then that's it. And it's there's so much work involved.
Right. People think there's a beginning, a middle, and the end. There definitely is a beginning, and there's mostly a middle. You know what I mean? There's highs and lows. And I personally don't think that there's an end of the transition. I think that your journey just keeps going and your gender keeps evolving and you're discovering yourself every day like you are doing.
Absolutely. I'm recalling now, as I was listening to you describe the film, that years later, so probably about, let's see, so we're 2025 now. So maybe starting around 2015 or a little bit around there, I remember hearing people sharply criticizing the FTM in the mirror image, right? The idea that we were making documentaries or we were being part of documentaries or films, and there would inevitably be the scene where the trans guy's shaving in the mirror.
Oh, yeah. Or,
you know, showing the top surgery scars. And there was this period of time, I haven't heard this in years, but it was a small window of time where that was highly criticized. I think it had to do with, it must have been before 2015, because I think it was the Affordable Care Act stuff before all that, when it was not as accessible to be able to have surgeries, and also just the taking testosterone. It might have been when genderqueer was really coming up and there was a way of problematizing medical transition. I think that's still a problem for some people.
I do remember that. Yeah. But
and so they would pick on these little pieces, you know, like Ryan Solins would make YouTube videos about his transition and other people were doing things. And I was always, why can't you just do your thing? And they're going to do their thing. And so I guess my question is, did anybody ever give you any crap about your documentary?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I'm not recalling that. I do remember what you're talking about, criticizing medical transitioning. And then I said the same thing. I was like, you know, everybody's got their own journey. I do see, if I peruse the young trans guys' Instagrams or TikToks or whatever, I do see a focus on that. I'm not in that phase any longer. So I don't, I'm not focused on it. But I'm like, okay, if that's what you guys are focused on, cool, cool, cool. But I am in a very genderqueer, non-binary community. And I love that. And if there are people who are medically transitioning and doing top surgery and stuff, and people who aren't, and it's nice to see a melding of that, where I do know that there are different groups who will still stand firm on that. You don't need to medically transition and stuff like that.
Yeah. If our goal is to be our authentic selves, why do some people think that it's their responsibility or their right to tell us what our authenticity is?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. This is authentic to me. I'm not performing any masculinity. This is how I was before I transitioned. I just look like a dude now. I'm probably even a little less masculine than I used to be. It's one of those things where you mentioned it earlier, the policing, right? Policing of words, but it's also the expression, you know, the negative connotations around binary trans guys or heteronormative. Just let people live their life. Unless we're We're doing bad things to people. Yeah.
Right. No, I get it. I like to do things that I call sassive aggressive, like sassy squatch. So people, I'll use old adages from the farm. Somebody's commenting at me, squawkity squawk. I go, opinions are like, everybody has one. Period. Yeah, I don't even need to comment on what they said. I don't give a you know what I mean? So I'm just, I'll be like, oh, you're having a bad day, huh? You need to tell me what my look is doing to your day. But not very many people do that because I don't know. I guess I have resting stank face. And also because I have the beard, I'm not going to lie, I look like, you know, just very dudely. But I will wear something fabulous and I don't get a lot of flack for it. But, you know, so I have to kind of have a little bit of courage and a little bit of muster. But yeah, no, if somebody's got an opinion, I'm just like, okay, you know, boy, you really had to say that, didn't you?
I can just imagine you in some sort of like Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence get up.
They tried to recruit me at the last outrageous bingo, just FYI.
I was at the airport one year and I stood behind this gentleman flying Southwest. And I didn't like the way I had my hat on my head before I left. So I turned it around and I didn't care. And I went to the airport and he made it a point to tell me that my hat was on backwards. And I said, yeah. And he snubbed me and got a little cocky about it. And I thought, and I'm keeping it exactly the way you said. And he
said, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Good eye, babe. That's what I'm going to say. Good eye.
It makes me think of those commercials, the one where the guy is meeting with the people who are becoming their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen those commercials where they're, yes, you know, they can't not say something to somebody? You know, it's like yes. What in the right exactly mind that is that person thinking that I should make a comment about somebody's hat? Now, if you were outside at a baseball game and your hat was on backwards and you were using your hand like a visor to block the sun, I think somebody might say,
That was designed for that exact thing. You should probably turn it around.
I hate to tell you guys, that would probably be me.
And then you would say, good eye. Thanks a lot. I'm keeping it this way.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was just going to say quickly, I'm 45 now. Part of things now is trying to be able to stick up for myself and say, be a little sassy back to them or whatever. You don't need to tell me your opinion. You don't even need to say nothing. You just go through this world not worried about what anybody else is wearing or doing. So I might just say to them, you don't need to be worrying about me, and then just walk the other way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to continue to do that. So
I love it.
Yeah,
of course. I would imagine there's something developmental about the stages we go through where we're a lot more interested in what people think about us and fitting in. And then we reach a certain age. I was reading something recently about, it was written by a woman who was saying she's loving being in her 50s because she had heard that the 50s were like, I don't give an F kind of decade. And she's like, it sure is for me. Like, she's enjoying that thing. And so it might be just something that we get either enough courage or enough life experience, or we know ourselves well enough that we just don't care
We're getting to really see the power of women taking hold again, 40s, 50s, 60s women, and being like, I'm hot. I look great. I have a lot of wisdom. I'm here doing my thing. And why don't you celebrate it? Get on the celebration train. And I do.
I love that. Okay. So the way you've described the kind of people you spend time with, right? Mm-hmm. Sounds to me like it aligns very well with the fact that you're artsy. And so you're probably in some sort of art scene or you're hanging out with artsy people.
Yeah, artsy.
And you did drop the word sassy a couple of times. So I want you to talk about, for as much time as you want to for our remaining time together, about this project that you're working on that seems to me like a good confluence of artsy and community.
Yeah.
Right. Which you've already mentioned is important, but it's something that you're working on. So you want to tell the listener what it is you're working on?
Yeah, so I live on a farm in Western Pennsylvania. I live next door to my parents. The farm's been in the family for like 7 or 8 generations. We're here. Oh my God, I'm going to stay here. I've been talking about having a little gay commune for decades, really, with my queer friends. But, you know, as things go, it's hard to organize stuff. And, you know, everybody's got to work and do things, et cetera. And I was finally like, you know, after this most recent terrible election, I was like, all right, what I've been talking literally since before that election happened, during, after all of this, I've been talking to my queer friends much more regularly than I had been before. So everybody was living their lives, doing their 30s, you know, whatevs. And not that I didn't talk to anybody, but, you know, more frequently. And then I was finally, so 2 years ago, 2 summers ago, I'm going to do this Camp Sassy Squatch. I'm going to have an intentional cooperative campground that's an educational conservation situation. And I really want it to be very queer bow face based. And now talking with other people and stuff, I have so many friends who are queer allies who may not necessarily identify as queer, but are very much full of love. So I've been talking to people and they're like, yeah, come on, bring them in, everybody, come on, let's go. So it's not just any old Dingleberry Johnson that's going to be, this is not open to the general public. This is going to be very much friends and friends of friends and people we know, et cetera. But it really is going to be workshops and, I want to set up solar on this little tiny house. Who wants to learn how to do solar? Here we go. We're going to YouTube this. We're going to learn it together. You know, there are going to be, I mean, literally anything you can think of. Also, I want it to be very BIPOC supportive. So Black and Indigenous people of color, everybody. And so one of my friends said, does it have to be specifically queer for these BIPOC groups? And I said, absolutely not. I want to offer a space where people feel comfortable to be in nature, but protected and loved and in a good place. Now, obviously, my mom and I talk about these things all the time. She's like, well, you can't offer 100% safety. And I was like, no one can. You know, absolutely. I understand that, but I really want to try. I really want to give it my all. But my queer friends are just, oh God, they're little hearts in their eyes. Everybody's like, oh my God, this sounds great. And so right now is this little itty bitty baby. We've got the land. We did a couple of campsites, but they need to be fixed up now because it's been a little bit. But I'm just inviting friends. It's a summer of friends. We're inviting friends. You know, maybe we weed whack a little bit and then have a glass of wine. What else? You know, it's not going to be, I can't do it physically anymore. I have a lot of injuries from all the sports and stuff over the years. So I can get a few hours in, but then it's time to sit under the awning and have a beverage and have some pizza and talk about life. So that's the other part of it. It's just a way for everybody to come together around the fire. This is what people have been doing for eons. We love doing it. And what a way to get close to, yeah, get closer is to do the things that you want to try out. You know, maybe you want to try to use that backo. Okay, honey, let's do it. You know, let's get you behind that backo. Let's get you brush hogging. Stuff that maybe they never even imagined they'd be doing. And they're like, wee, I'm riding an ATV. Yay. You know, but also on top of that, we're going to have discussions around racism and around gender and around sexuality and have all these wonderful types of workshops too. And then, of course, we're going to want to have Tai Chi and Qigong and yoga and Reiki and massage and acupuncture. I'm an acupuncturist licensed in Pennsylvania. Anybody want to come here? Get your queer acupuncture here. So, you know, obviously I want to do some acupuncture workshops, etc. But I mean, you name it. I want to start in the fall and winter of this year to come up with the programming, etc.
We are taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. And our guest this hour is Faye Gibson. Faye is a trans activist, artist, and performer featured in Gender Redesigner. He remains active in LGBTQ+ advocacy and healthcare. Let's take a short commercial break. We are always grateful to play these commercials because our sponsors support the Umbrella Hour. We also hope that you will check out theumbrellahour.com and Xander Kegg's Substack, The Umbrella Hour. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. Our guest is Faye Gibson. Let's get back to where we left off.
I mean, I have moments where my brain feels like it's just going to explode or implode because I'm like, oh my God, the organization. But I've put the call out to the friends. So many people have been like, I'm more of an organizer than a manual laborer. And I'm like, honey, I need you. People are like, I know how to design a website. I'll help you. I was like, good. I need it. You know, so I'm trying to just not freak out as much as I had before, which is why it took a whole year for me to even do anything because I was just, And then I was like, just ask for help. I know that seems so simple, right? But it's not.
I think thoughts can take a year, if not years.
Okay.
Before actualizing.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I get a little hard on myself. I'm like, geez, Faye, it took you long enough. But then I have to be exactly like you said, you know, it was incubating. It was percolating. Am I even going to be here? You know, with the state of the world, I was like, do I want to stay in Western Pennsylvania, et cetera? Then interestingly enough, it is a really weirdly well-positioned place because we're right next to Interstate 80, which is an international thoroughfare because there are so many people from all over the world who are truck drivers, different races, different genders who go along that and they stop off at the little truck stop there. So those folks at the truck stop and in that area are used to people from all over the world and lots of different colors, which is great bonus. And we're next to the Allegheny River. We're next to Moraine State Park, which is a big, huge lake. We're easy to access, but also in the middle of nowhere. So it's a really good location. I'm excited. So that's how I was, okay, good. I can be here, especially if I surround myself with awesome queers and queer allies. I think I can do this.
Well, yeah. In Pennsylvania, I mean, there's a long history, right, with the Mennonites and the Amish. There are a lot of people that are doing off the grids, homesteaders. There's also intentional communities all over the world and across the United States. Are you looking to connect in with any of those systems?
What a great point you just made there. Yeah, there's Amish people, Mennonites, Quakers, everybody out here. And it's a live and let live, which I definitely very much feel where I live. They're just, oh, there's Faye, whatever. You know, I don't do what you do.
No, it's good,
I'm living in this spot that I grew up in. They knew me pre-transition and now. And but that's a great point. And again, to the listeners, I'm not trying to invent the wheel here. I know that intentional communities have been going on for a year and that there are really awesome queer ones too. I'm introducing myself to different groups and wanting to go visit and learn how they've been doing things and try to set this place up for success. Again, I want it to be very cooperative. I want everybody to vote on everything, et cetera. But right now it's just me scooping dirt and weed whacking. But yeah, we want to set
I met a trans guy who's married to a man and they have a campsite in Arkansas.
Cute.
And the trans guy goes to Camp Lost Boys.
Yes. Hard to try to get a slot in that is like finding a needle in a haystack. It is hard.
I know.
So thank you for bringing that up because I love Rocco and I love that group and I love what they're doing. They're doing a great, awesome thing. So I'm going to try to reach out to him too. And eventually when I have my place set up, I'd love for them to host one there, but that's, you know, way in the future. That's years in the future. But I'm just so thrilled that they've had the interest that they have had. And it seems like so wonderful. What great programming. I just love it. I'm really excited.
It's massive. I think the Pennsylvania camp this year is the 10th, if I remember correctly. I think his name is Nick. I'm spacing on his name. He started that Camp Arantique in New Hampshire.
Oh, no, I haven't met him.
A trans guy, social worker, wrote a book, Transgender 101. I think that might even be the title of it. And he started Camp Arantique, which had a New Hampshire and a California camp. And then he created Harbor Camps, which Camp Arantique is just one. He's got multiple camps that meet on the same campground. He owns the campground now in New Hampshire. And of course, there's all of the lesbian lands that are all over the country. And then there's the gay campgrounds and the radical fairy. So there's all these interesting different groups of people that are doing something similar. There's probably, I don't know if it's LGBT, you know, or Q, but it might just be gay and lesbian. But anyways, a network of RVers and they meet up at RV camps all around the country. It's just, there's so many interesting things for people to get checked into. Is Camp Sassy Squatch, is the idea for it to be something, a traditional camp where a group comes for a week or two? Or is the idea to ultimately have it be something that's year round and has things that come and go?
I would ultimately like it to be year round. That's going to be way in the future. But yes, coming up next summer, this summer's beta, we're getting things together. Friends are coming to do it. But yes, in the future, people can block out a whole week, 2 weeks if they want their little group to be there for that long. But ultimately, I'd love for little tiny homes year round, elder care, animal rescue, getting the queer bows, enjoying themselves, having a great time, being in community. I also want to mention that it is a 501c3. We just got our official status.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So you can donate, everybody. CampSassySquatch.com. I'm going to put a donate button on there pretty soon.
Yeah, Camp Sassy Squatch.
Woo!
Where did that name come to you? What's the thing? You like sassy, so...
I like
but
sassy.
Where's Sassy
like
Squatch? Where does that come from?
I've always loved Bigfoots. My brother is a very large guy who walks like Bigfoot. And we always used to joke that, oh, there he is. He's sleeping. He's sleepy Squatch. There he is. He's hungry. He's hungry Squatch. He's in a real mood today. He's Sassy Squatch. So Sassy Squatch kind of always lived in my brain. And then I just traipsing on this land. We've had it since the early 2000s and just taking the dogs on walks and stuff like that. And I'm just like, Camp Sassy Squatch, huh? Yeah, I like that. And it just kind of stuck. The Sasquatch lore is thick and beautiful throughout this whole country and probably all around the world, really. Yetis, etc. But so it's just fun to imagine just queer Squatch just traipsing around the woods. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a visit from an actual one.
What I love about it is it's very playful.
You know, I love, if you can't tell. So Camp Sassy Squatch is hopefully going to be filled with a lot of it. So I'm really excited.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to know more about it, gosh, I think Xander and On are going to put some information about it on their website. You can find me on Instagram, gender_redesigner, sassysquatch.com. There's a help me, friends.
Yeah, let's help build the Camp Sassy Squatch Instagram.
Let's help it.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Faye.
Oh my gosh, what a delight. Thank you so much for having me.
We are at the end of the Umbrella Hour. You've been listening to Dr. On and Xander Kegg and our wonderful guest, Faye Gibson. Until next time, thank you for listening.